Welcome back, humor consumers, to the Life Happens, Laugh Anyway podcast. I'm comedian Tracy DeGraff.
And I'm Catherine, co-host and bestie.
Welcome back to the Pod Lab, Catherine. We are today recording episode number 165.
That's right. And I was just thinking, we say this every time, welcome to the Life Happens, Laugh Anyway podcast. And I was thinking, yeah, wow, life does happen.
Amen to
and
that,
life
sister.
Life is happening.
Always.
And we need to, and we both, you know, we pray before we begin. And I was thinking, yeah, how are we going to laugh anyway?
Yeah.
Things are kind of
not
tough.
Funny.
Right.
You know, that's how comedy is.
Yeah.
Most right. Comedy, the definition of comedy is tragedy
plus time.
So it's not usually funny in the moment. Yeah. But it's funny later. Mm-hmm. You can learn to laugh at it later. And so.
But it's not later yet.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
We're just trying to get along, you know, go along to get along. Mm-hmm. Today's episode is about this documentary that we just watched called Three Identical Strangers.
Wow. It was a doozy.
It was.
Yeah.
And okay, let's just be honest with our audience. Here's the reason why we chose that one.
Here comes the laughter.
Here comes the truth. We had an emotional day.
Yeah.
We started the day with prayer, and that was, we didn't have any tissues on the table.
I know.
And I looked at that, and I went, I'm not going to cry anyway, so I'm not going to get up and go get a tissue. And I was the first one to break.
Yeah.
And then our friend Kim got up and got the tissues.
Yeah.
But that's what we do. We have a prayer group. We meet every Monday, and it's just a bunch of moms, five of us, ladies and moms, and mostly empty nesters. We're friends.
Right.
And we just meet to pray about our lives and pray, you know, for our families, pray for our church, pray for our community, all of that. Mm-hmm. And lots of times there's tears.
Yeah.
And it was during the confession time that my tears started to fall out of my face because my heart was just bubbling up saying, I'm sorry, God.
I felt it coming too.
Oh,
I
you
knew
know
it was
me.
Coming.
I know. And then Catherine puts her hand on me and I'm like, oh, it's making it worse.
I know. I kind of thought that too. I'm
it's
like,
okay.
Well, there's no stopping it.
No, it's okay. We're just processing, you know, and we're human.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Last time I checked, I'm not perfect. Mm. So I have sins. So we do this prayer thing and we follow the ACTS acronym.
Mm-hmm.
ACTS stands for Adoration, Confession, Thanksgiving, Supplication. Anybody that was a Christian back in the 80s, you might have heard of it back then. That's when I learned about it
mm-hmm.
when I was in college and just decided, gosh, 13 years ago? 12 years ago?
Yeah, about that.
We've been doing this for 12 years, mm-hmm. roughly, because I was going through a rough time. One of my kids was going through a rough time and we just decided, or I decided, I don't have anything that I can do in this situation except pray.
Yeah. And I didn't join you in the very beginning
because
I was like, what? Pray out loud?
No, thanks.
Thanks for inviting me, but I'll wait.
And confession.
Whoa. Oh, yeah, the confession, too.
And there's no scream. I know. It's so much
and
fun.
Also, the hour and a half that you said that, you
to
know.
To carve out.
Right. Well, it wasn't so much the time. It was like, pray out loud
what are you
for an hour
say?
And a half? This sounded very overwhelming and intimidating to me at the time.
Yeah. And now you're like, this is my jam.
Well, yeah. I'm
These
not
are
done.
My peeps.
Now I'm like, I'm not done yet.
Yeah. And now we have kind of narrowed it down to an hour because we have more structure. And yeah, we have some time constraints with jobs and such. You know, not us,
well,
but other people.
Not me.
Other people. Anyway, because we had prayer this morning and there were emotions that were stirred, you know, we got to the point where it's time to record the podcast and we had a different plan in place, but we didn't have the energy for it.
Right.
So we'll have to bring that to you later. And that the topic on that one was going to be seeking
God's guidance.
Guidance
and how to.
Right. Well, you pray about
and
it.
And we were both like, I feel kind of drained. I don't know that I could give it with
Pull
confidence
it up.
Right now.
So we decided to look for a documentary that was short.
Yeah.
You know, like an hour and a half, under 2 hours, one episode, not like 10.
Now that I think about it, I was thinking, yeah, I need something just like a little bit more appalling, you know, a little bit like way worse than my situation.
Oh my gosh. Do you know what I do? I did this yesterday because I was just thinking about a certain topic and I'm like, I don't want to think about that anymore. So I started listening to a murder podcast.
I know.
I'm like, I'm going to listen to this murder podcast and that's going to make me feel so much better.
I know.
About like, my life.
I feel like listening to Keith Morrison tell me a story about somebody else's
demise. It's not funny.
It's not funny at all.
It's not.
But it is a confession.
True crime is truly...
It's terrible.
It is. Anyway, let's move on. Let's not talk about it anymore. Mm. All right. So anyway, that's why we chose this documentary, because it's short, an hour and a half or so, and it sounded intriguing.
Yeah.
Three identical strangers about triplets who were separated at birth and how they came together and all the twists and turns.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to talk about. Before we get to that, though, Catherine, tell our listeners, if they're tuning in for the first time, tell them how they can sponsor our podcast.
It's very easy.
Oh, yeah. Get out your wallets, friends.
That's right. You could go to tracydegraff.com and you could follow the prompts. It's very easy. I checked it out myself to see if I could do it. Anybody can do it. Also, yes. And our contributors give us $5 a month. That helps us pay for the platform. We got these new microphones and a couple other things to make the microphones work.
Yes. And cords and such.
Like some box. I don't know.
I don't know how it works either. We had to have help with that.
That's right. So anyway, and we have a mission here with
this podcast.
And so the mission is that we want to magnify the Lord. We want to point people to God. And so that's our mission.
It is.
We don't spend the entire podcast talking about him, but we just want to move people in that direction because life does happen and life is hard and messy, ugly, and but it's also could be very joyous too.
Right. So, and in exchange,
anyway, I got off. Woo, that was a...
That's okay. In exchange for your $5, you will get our gratitude. Yes. You will get our hearty thanks.
Yeah. I looked into it. We have 20 sponsors right now. Some
that's so exciting.
Have given us, one lump sum, and that works as well. And it is very exciting. I think that's a lot of supporters.
I agree. They're actually coming alongside of us and encouraging us, because it does encourage us to see that, you know, people care enough to support us with their funds. Mm-hmm. So, and it does cost to put this out. So just saying.
They could go to Patreon as well, by the way.
They can. All right. Well, thank you for that. Let's dive into this incredible documentary. Mm-hmm. Here's the outline that we came up with. We're going to tell you what we learned on the documentary, how it hit us, and then what was the third thing?
Nature versus nurture.
Oh my gosh, we sound like identical twins. And as usual, at the end, we have a little bit of scripture and some kind of a call to action. We forgot to talk about a call to action, but it'll bubble up.
Yeah.
All right. So if you've never heard of this film before, Three Identical Strangers, describe it, Catherine.
It is, it opens up with one of these three triplets, all boys. They were born in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, this first man is being interviewed, and he talks about when he was 18 or 19, and he goes off to college, a community college, and he enters it, and all these people are very friendly to him. Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. And someone says, hey, Eddie. He's like, I'm not Eddie. Come to find out, because another buddy says, you are a twin. I know you are.
Yeah.
Were you adopted? He says, yes. So anyway, they literally race in a car to go to this Eddie's house and say, hey, this has got to be your twin. They make national news and make the headlines. And then another young man named David sees this, or his friends see it or whatever. And then he says,
that's me.
That's me as
times
well.
Times two.
Yes. But it goes into a deeper, deeper can of worms, rather.
Yeah.
These young men, they had been adopted out of an agency in New York called Lewis Wise Services, or Lewis Wise Adoption Agency.
Louise.
Yes, you're right. Louise.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that they were a very powerful organization, politically, socially elite people. And this Dr. Peter Neubauer, I think it was.
Yeah, I think that's how you say
it. He was a psychologist. Psychology stuff, studies was really taken off at that time in the late 50s, early 60s. And they were, unbeknownst to the parents who adopted these children, they were doing a study on nature versus nurture. But the parents didn't know this. They had no idea that there were, in this case, in this particular case, that there were three boys, and not just, you know, the one that they adopted. We find out later in the documentary that not only that, but they were carefully selected because these three families that adopted the three boys had also previously adopted an older sibling. So these so-called psychologists were going to study these children and see, witness the differences between them in their, you know, the parenthood, the parenting, their environment, and all of these things. And it's a little bit shocking when one woman is interviewed. She, in the very beginning, was part of the study in some way, and she claims no responsibility about this. She says, you have to understand, in the 50s and 60s, or 50s and early 60s, that psychology was exciting and it was a whole new thing.
Such a BS.
I'm not buying it. If it feels wrong, which it should have.
Because they were hiding it.
Oh, yes. That was the major thing about this. It was secret. These studies, by the way, were never released. In fact, not only not released, but they were under a sealed lock and key at Yale University, and it was supposed to be till 2065, right?
When everybody's dead and gone.
2065.
Yeah.
And anyway, the story ends up in some tragedy because one of the brothers who suffered, they say, with mental illness. But I came away, with that was that it was caused by the tearing apart of the families.
That's a speculation. One could say that depression, they considered him a manic depressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one could say that it was or fed into because he was torn apart from his two womb mates.
Yeah, womb mates. Oh my goodness.
Well, I've heard that about twins, and I've heard that about multiples, that they, when they're outside of the womb, they repeat behavior that they had inside of the womb. And, you know, they finish each other's sentences, and they just like little babies will like to cuddle together like they did inside the womb and such, right? Well, they tore these boys apart and put them in different families. So you could say, well, yeah, that was a result of the suffering that he endured. But I don't know if you could attest all of it to
I maybe misspoke. I meant when they became adults and they were in business together, and then the brothers, it's hard to be in business with anyone. And anyway, these brothers were, they owned a restaurant together, and the one brother was like, okay, I'm gonna break away. And the brother, Eddie, was so tore up about it because he wanted to
keep
the family together, and he wanted, you know, puppy dogs and rainbows, and it wasn't happening.
Yeah, don't we all want the puppy dogs and rainbows?
Yeah.
Let's stop. I'm going to stop you for a second and go back to at the very, very beginning when Robert was initially on that college campus and walking around, and people were like, hey, Eddie, and his name's Robert. And
Bobby.
Robert, his name is Robert. But they thought that he was Eddie. And Catherine and I look a lot of like, especially when our hair was the same color. Like my hair is almost all white. I have some like darker color in the back, but my hair is pretty white now, so people don't do it now. But back in the day when I colored my hair and Catherine colored her hair, people at our church would mix us up. Because we went to the same church, and people at the school would mix us up.
A lot of people,
And one time I'm at the school, and this woman thinks I'm Catherine. And she's talking to me, and I don't realize that she thinks I'm Catherine. And I'm thinking, I'm clearly crazy, because I don't remember this person at all. And she's talking to me like we're buds.
Yeah.
You know, and like we did this stuff last week, and I'm going,
Didn't she give you a big hug? Yes. You're like, this is awkward.
I was like, why don't I remember her? I couldn't figure it out. And then one time at our church, the youth pastor went up to Catherine and thought that she was Tracy. And the youth pastor says, blah, 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 about your son. And Catherine's like, that's Tracy's kid.
Yes. Remember at Evelina's when the one guy thought we tricked him?
Oh,
because
there
were two locations for the little consignment shop where we worked. And I was behind the counter at one location. Tracy was behind the counter at another. And this guy was like, what? Huh? Wait a minute.
How'd you get over here?
How'd you get transported over here? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And by the way, I didn't tell you this, but the last event that you just did in Dyer.
Oh, yeah.
There was someone that came up to me and said, are you guys sisters?
Yeah.
And
well, it used to happen a lot before I colored my hair. Well, I don't know. I guess it happens still after my hair color came out.
It does sometimes.
People think I'm Catherine's mother.
Yeah.
And she thinks that's so funny. She's just like, oh, what did you say? Say it louder so Tracy can hear. And then when she says, no, we're friends. And then I remember the one time the woman's like, well, don't tell Tracy.
Yeah.
Don't tell her. Right. And then as soon as we get in the car, you know what so-and-so said? She said, you were my mother. Like, oh, thank you. Thank you, Catherine. Yeah. So that would be pretty weird for this kid to be on this campus.
Yeah.
And Eddie was a gregarious person, mm-hmm. and he was a people person.
Yeah.
You know, and he was out and about and enjoying life, and everybody seemed to love him.
Yeah.
And then here comes Robert, and, you know, he's like, what?
Exactly. Yeah. And these students at the college knew that Eddie wasn't coming back because he had said the previous year, I'm not going to come back.
Right.
And so they were like, oh, glad you're back and all these things. And poor Bobby, Robert, was just flabbergasted.
Yeah. And he had said, too, that he was never popular, like in high school and such. So that must have been a big taking it back for him.
Right.
Like, whoa.
Yes.
What's going on?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, then what happened after the two twins, or they're triplets, but the two got wind of each other and they met.
Mm-hmm.
Then it got to the press.
Right.
And Newsday, some guy named Howie from Newsday printed an article, and that's how the other brother.
Right.
What was his name?
David.
David. That's how David got involved.
Yes.
Then the three brothers are together, the triplets, right? Mm-hmm. Separated at birth. And what are the odds that they would still be within a 100-mile radius? Well, guess what? They're part of a research study, and the researchers don't want to drive all over the country.
Unbeknownst to them. Yeah. I think it's interesting that one of the brothers that was interviewed said early on, I think they were quoting their brother, Eddie, who was no longer with them now anyway. And he said, this is going to be really great. Terrible.
Yeah.
Something. But they really embraced their brotherhood.
They did.
And they went along with the things in which they had in common and similar. And they took it and they ran with it and innocently. You know, people wanted them to be a lot alike, right?
Well, and back then in the 80s, media was like Phil Donahue got a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were on the Phil Donahue show and then they were interviewed by
Tom Brokaw.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's big.
Yeah.
That's huge, because that's before the internet. There's no internet back then.
And
so,
Maury Povich and all those crazy things.
So I would say it was a media frenzy, you know, and almost like instant stardom.
Yeah, because even when they went out in public, they were, people noticed them and they had followers. And at one point, they were in New York on the street. And then this gal says to them, will you be in my movie? Be in my movie, because she recognized them.
Right.
They didn't know who she was. Turns out it was Madonna.
Yeah. And then they had a little part in a movie that she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, so all this media frenzy and the brothers are in love with each other instantly.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
No.
I mean, you've got three Catherines.
And you're oh my gosh, like, I don't know if I'd like that.
You're like, we're beautiful. Look at us. You know what I would be doing?
I'll gain weight at the same time.
Oh my gosh. That's what I would be saying is, am I the fattest one? I hope not. I hope somebody's fatter than me. Can we all get on a scale? I was raised by a fat woman. I can't help it. Okay, speaking of raised by, the parents were, of course, floored.
Yeah, they wanted to get some answers.
But they were angry. Like, I think that they would probably be genuinely happy for their sons that they were experiencing this happy go-lucky time.
Especially that David's dad. They say he was the one where
he embraced it.
Yeah, they hung out at his home the most because he was just that kind of personality, the dad. He right. was, how did they describe him?
Well, he said, now I have three sons.
Yes.
He just embraced yes. them as a group immediately. Mm-hmm. And they told the parents that the reason that the adoption agency did not release three kids to one family is because they didn't think they would want them.
Which was a lie. They find out.
Because they said we would take all of them.
Right. So the parents, the boys are like, who cares? They're 19. Right. And they're just having fun catching up, right? And they're out and about.
And partying.
And, well, they're young men.
Right. And then, they're out in New York. Right. And they're getting all this media attention and whatever else attention. And they're out there having a good time.
Right. Meanwhile, the parents are going to this Louise. I keep saying it wrong.
No, you said it right. Louise.
Oh, gosh.
Louise Wise
Services or Adoption Agency. They have a meeting with the people there. And basically, they walk away with not being satisfied in terms of their questions and, you know, what happened. Because they were told exactly what you right. just said. Well, we didn't think that people would adopt three at once. Well, one of the fathers forgot his umbrella. And so he goes back into the agency, the building. And he happens to catch them toasting over champagne like they had just had some kind of success or the way he worded it was they dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
And they did at that time dodge a bullet because they didn't know at the time that there was this study.
Well, and these parents attempted to bring a lawsuit against the Louise Wise Adoption Agency because of the deceptive practices.
Mm-hmm.
And they were told at the beginning of the adoption that the boys were all in a study about adoptive kids.
Yeah.
They were not told that right. these boys were triplets and that they were studying this nurture versus nature thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they're in a study. And so researchers came regularly to test the boys on different things.
Film them. Yeah. And yes.
And these parents felt like, rightly so, they were violated.
Absolutely.
It was not ethical for them to know that their children had identical triplets.
Yes.
You know, multiples.
Right.
So they tried to sue them. But the lawsuit didn't go anywhere because the lawyers didn't have enough oomph to do it. They said that they didn't think that they could get over the hump because this was too influential of an adoption agency.
Right. They had so many deep political ties
right.
with powerful people. And so that was a main reason why they couldn't go forward with
it. They didn't want to tick these powerful people off.
Right.
It's too bad, so sad for you parents that raised, you know, triplets and then not knowing. Too bad for you.
Yeah.
Then the triplets ended up getting an apartment together as young men.
Yes.
And one of the sisters, one of the adopted sisters of the triplets said it was what you would imagine a bachelor pad would be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just lots of liquor, and they showed a picture of them drinking out of a punch bowl with straws, you know.
Yeah.
So they were living it up.
Right.
Well, and at one point, Eddie pretended to be Bobby.
Yes.
Because Eddie didn't have any health insurance, but Bobby did.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie needed his appendix out.
Yeah.
And so he went to the local hospital and pretended like he was Bobby and got his appendix out. And then they were all just hoping that Bobby wouldn't need to also get his appendix out.
Right, right.
Then they talked to the wives.
Yeah, so because that was interesting. They grew up and I thought it was interesting, yes, that each wife said their husbands were beloved. They had nothing but good things to say about each one of them.
Yeah, and each one of them said out of the three that theirs was the best.
I got the best one. That's right. And I thought that was endearing.
It was. Mm-hmm. And Eddie was the last one to marry. He was the lone survivor as a bachelor or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And he was described as lovable, mushy, warm, a connector, all those things.
And Bob, I don't know, did they say which one was born first? I didn't catch that if they did.
I don't know if they did.
But they described Bobby, they described him as reserved, and they described David as kind of in the middle of reserved and gregarious, but they said Eddie was for sure. What's happening?
I don't know. It's okay, though.
Okay. Eddie was for sure the gregarious one.
Yes, so, that's right.
So, very cool.
And Bobby was born adopted into a doctor's family. The mother was an attorney, and I believe it was David that had the blue collar father, and they owned like this little business, right?
Yeah, they had like a grocery store. No, it was David. They were the least educated. They were immigrants.
Yeah.
English was their second language. And yeah. I think they owned some kind of a convenience store or grocery store.
Yeah. And then Eddie's parents, they were middle class.
Yeah, his dad was a teacher.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so at this point, nobody knows yet about this research of the multiples. They know that there was research done, mm-hmm. but at this point, they don't know yet that it was research about multiples until Eddie decides to search for their birth mom.
Yeah.
He led the charge for that. He wanted to know, well, where's our birth mom?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that the birth mom, they went to the New York local library, the public library, and they looked at the birth records. How hard could it be?
It didn't take them that long. What'd they say? A couple hours, I think?
Yeah. I mean, they just looked for triplets. That's rare. Mm-hmm. Born on the day that they were born.
Right.
In 1961. And they did find out that their mom was very young. It was a prom night. They called it a prom night knockup.
Right.
Knock up.
Yeah.
Not knock out.
Oh, did I say knock out? Same thing.
And mom, they searched her out and they got together with her. Well, mm-hmm. they got together at a bar. And they were concerned when they discovered that the three of them were drinking with their mom and she was keeping up with them.
Right.
And they said that she never really got over the separation of her and her children, which is quite sad.
Yeah. Definitely.
So at this point, all three men are young. They're starting their careers. They're
getting married.
They've met their mom. They've got all this notoriety. And that's at the point where they decide, let's open a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they do.
Right.
So, and it's called Triplets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was successful. They made $1 million in their first year.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Especially in 1980, whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's right around then. That things got weird.
Yeah.
According to, was it the sister?
Yeah, because different personalities with, you know, like even though they were the same, mm-hmm. like these brothers, they had a lot of similarities, but they had different opinions on work ethic and they had different opinions on what should be done. We all do.
Mm-hmm. You Absolutely.
Know, one of the things that Catherine and I talked about as we were kind of thinking, would this be an interesting subject for our listeners? I think when you raise kids, right? Or when you're a sibling, you're part of a sibling group, mm-hmm. you come up in the same environment in terms of the same home, the same town, the same two parents, whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's some differences, like somebody might have a different dad or a different mom, but you're raised together, or you might be stepbrothers and sisters, or what, there might be some differences, but you're basically in the same environment, mm-hmm. same schools, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You're different.
Yeah.
You have different likes and dislikes. Mm-hmm. You have different opinions on things. You even might have a different perspective of the exact same incident.
I know. Yeah. It's amazing how that can be. You know?
It's true.
We're all created different.
We are.
And we are bound to have different perspectives.
Yeah.
Different views. And the birth order, too, plays into factor, too. You know.
It does. Because oldest, middle, youngest, mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Only child. And so I've had 5 sons and they're all different.
Yeah.
You know, I can see some similarities in them.
Yeah.
They're all different. And I have a brother and a sister. We're all different. You have a brother and a sister. You're all different.
Right.
But these guys were identical triplets.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that connection.
They sure did. And they were, in the beginning, they were embracing that. And they were celebrating their sameness.
Right.
But, you know, when you're in business together, that's when you really start to notice your differences, right? You know, that's when you, and they're men now. They're married. And I know the one had a child.
Yeah.
So when you're all puppy dogs and rainbows in the beginning and you're embracing your similarities and things, that's great. But when those differences bubble up, you know.
Well, when you're squeezed, that's when you discover what comes out.
Yeah, that's true.
And then we none of us are perfect. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us is flawed and we have a bent towards sin. I mean, we know that, the sinful nature, that we're not bent. We're not bent toward righteousness. We're bent towards sin.
Yeah.
So we're flawed. We're weak.
Yeah.
Okay, so they met the mom. They were concerned about her. And then this Lawrence Wright pops in.
Journalist.
Yeah, what was he? Was he a lawyer or a journalist?
He was a journalist.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he starts digging in, and he was told that there were 6 to 8 sets of twins or multiples in the study.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of secrecy around this study.
Well, yeah, and he was really bothered by the fact that he says one of the most aggravating things when you're a journalist is when you don't get to the bottom of what you want to get to the bottom of. And he says, I can't because those are sealed.
Right.
And the results are not out there.
Right.
So yeah, how frustrating that had to be, you know, for him. And he seemed to genuinely want justice for these families.
He did. And he did discover that they were an experiment. That, you know,
yeah,
there were tests that were done, experiments, films. And around age 9 to 10, one of the brothers, I don't remember which one, said, but he said around age 9 or 10, that's when it started to get less comfortable.
Yeah, when they were being examined
and
filmed.
Just like,
he's
this
like,
is
Mom,
weird.
Do I have to do this anymore?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the parents continued to be told that this was a part of an adaptive children's study,
mm-hmm,
you know, and that they were doing these psychological tests over years.
Yeah.
Like 20 years, from like 1960 to 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when this all came to the public through the media frenzy of these triplets discovering each other, that's when it basically was shut down.
Yeah, it's right about this time in the documentary too that I started to realize, oh my goodness, I read about this. I think it was a People magazine, and it was two, if I remember right, two women who were sisters who were separate, and I believe it's the same agency, because they talked about a case study and they were unaware of it. Their adoptive parents were unaware of it. And I thought, oh wow, this is coming full circle.
You know what it makes me think of is Dr. Mengele. From the Holocaust. Have you heard of him?
I'm not sure.
Okay, he was a physician. He was a German Nazi. And he would take twins that were brought in to the concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
So he would take Jewish twins, and he would do experiments on them to see how would one twin do versus the other twin. And it was like torture things and stuff. He was sick.
Wow.
He was absolutely sick.
Mm.
And it kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah. And how
strange, to a different
too,
degree.
That
but
this doctor that headed this whole thing, he was a Jewish doctor that survived the Holocaust.
Hello.
Yeah.
You know what? Here's a bottom line that I think, Catherine, because all of these researchers, like the one lady said, well, we didn't know back then, that we didn't think there was any harm. Here's what I think. I think that people in general will justify their behavior regardless.
Good point. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
They'll just justify it.
Right.
It's easier to justify it than to say I was wrong.
I was wrong. Yeah. Even that they have one man, I forget his name. He's interviewed toward the end, and he's the only surviving one that will actually talk to this documentary and
right, anybody. Right. Yes.
And he was part of the study from, I think, 68 to 69.
Yeah, he had said. A short period, yes.
Right. And I didn't really find him remorseful to, but he did admit that, yes, in hindsight, I do think it was ethically wrong, but his behavior in the beginning of the interview didn't reflect that. But
yeah, which anyway was unfortunate, because I mean, maybe, I don't know, at the point of when he was interviewed, if he realized all that had happened to these three boys. No, I mean, after watching the documentary about these triplets, it just made me sad that they were beautiful young boys, beautiful young men, beautiful people that were denied the opportunity to know each other as children. I mean, they could have done these stinking tests. They could have just said to the parents, you know what, we have triplets and we would like to adopt them out in different families
and study.
And you
get
can
your permission.
You could know each other. They could know, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or maybe one of the families would say, well, I'd like to take all three of them. And then they could maybe ask another family. But it's unethical to do these things under the table.
Absolutely. It's just, it's absolutely wrong. And I don't even see how one could justify that.
You can't. Right. That's why they have to say, well, we didn't think it was wrong at the time, because mm-hmm. they've got to find some justification, so they pull it out of their you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
That's aggravating.
I hate when people lead with, you got to understand. When someone starts with that or leads with that, that means I'm about to explain something that you don't understand because you, you know.
It's like mansplaining.
Yeah.
I watched a comedian explaining mansplaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was explaining mansplaining. I was like, oh gosh, just shut up.
Interesting.
Okay, where do we go from here? Okay, so they did say that in the study, they wanted to discover how do we become who we are, right? They mm-hmm. wanted to discover how is it that people become who they are, and was it nature, was it nurture? Was it just a destiny from their genes, or was it the home environment that they lived in, mm-hmm. you know? Let's see, it says... Okay, the one guy said, we are moved to behaviors that we are totally unaware of. And that would be, obviously, you know, like genes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I was so aggravated when the one woman, she had said something about, well, people say that we have free will, but I don't really think. And I was just aggravated by that.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
And she might have been the same one. I didn't write down who said this, but somebody was upset of how little control we have over ourselves. And I'm thinking, really? Was mm-hmm. it that gal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's
the
a
one
dummy.
We didn't like.
Sorry.
As if we know her.
Well, I mean, I just disagree with that.
Yeah, I do too.
And I wouldn't say that it's biological, because we've just pointed out in our sibling groups we're all different, our children are all different.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's different because these guys were identical triplets. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the study, I mean, the agency knew what they were doing when they placed them in these homes.
Of course, it was all calculated.
Mm-hmm, very calculated.
They intentionally put them in three different economic statuses.
Right, that's why I mentioned it.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. wanted to see, well, how does this guy turn out with all the money, with the doctor? How does this guy turn out with the immigrants?
Right, because they were actually studying the parenting as well.
Yeah. It's just a weird thing when you realize you've been duped.
Yeah.
You know, you're mm-hmm. like, dang it. And then you're like, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting to me that they pointed out is that in the business relationship that they had, there were conflicts regarding the work ethic and all of that. And one of the dad had passed away that kind of brought them all together. And they talked about how when you're kids, you fight with your siblings. So you learn how to
adjust and compromise to one another.
Right. You mm-hmm. have like a lifetime of experiences of fighting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, as a married woman, I've been married now 35 years almost. I do believe, like, my best advice for young people getting married is basically learn how to fight.
Mm.
Not like how to throw a left hook.
No.
But learn how to agree to disagree, mm-hmm. learn how to negotiate, learn how to communicate mm-hmm. with truth, but yet not hurt, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
That if you can get that down pat with relationships, it's not perfect.
Right.
But you
just learn how to move on
from and go
the
forward.
Disagreement.
Yeah, that would be great. I think that's a key skill mm-hmm. in life.
And they were pointing out in this documentary that these boys hadn't had the chance to do that.
Right. They were denied that opportunity. Mm-hmm. I would think that as much as they enjoyed one another, like in their early adulthood, I would think that they would have a lot of regrets that they didn't experience one another from younger.
Yeah.
And then as they moved into adulthood and found difficulties,
mm-hmm.
They didn't really say the last two brothers at the end. Of course, the one killed himself, Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
But for David and Robert at the end, when they brought them together on screen, it looked a little awkward. And I don't know if that was intentional. And the one says, oh, hello. And he goes, hello.
Nice to see you, he says.
Yeah. So that'd be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wrote down that when living in a family, you learn to adjust to one another.
Yeah, I jotted that too.
Yeah. Bobby, as Catherine pointed out, Bobby left the restaurant because he just couldn't take it anymore. And he felt as though he was betrayed, or the other two brothers felt that it was a betrayal that he would leave.
Right.
But he felt like he was being pushed out.
Right.
So there were just disagreements. Mm-hmm. And it created major damage to the relationship.
Yeah.
Eddie was very hurt by that, and then he started to exhibit these high highs and low lows.
Yeah, after that.
Severely.
Right.
So who knows? Maybe he had, like, bipolar disorder.
All along, and it was...
triggered. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I don't know how that works, but it came about that he was institutionalized as a result.
Yeah.
And put into a facility for a few weeks to try to get some help. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, he shot himself.
Yeah.
Not in the institution, but in his home.
Right. Across the street from the restaurant.
Yeah. Very sad. And they did point out that all three boys raised in the three different homes during their teenage years, they all had really difficult mental issues that they dealt with.
Yeah. I found that
interesting.
I did.
And even as youngsters, when they were angry or whatever, they would bang their heads up against the floor.
The two had said that, right.
Yeah. And Robert was accused of involvement in a murder.
Right. Which he had said, I wasn't any part of it. I happened to be there, and I was asked to lie about this situation,
right.
Something like that. But when he was much younger.
He was not charged, so. Mm-hmm. Schizophrenia was brought up, that maybe Eddie had schizophrenia, and that might have led to his suicide, so that was, you know, a possibility.
Yeah, I would imagine that all kinds of speculation could be thrown out there, but...
In a case like this, and you have a tragedy like that, you're just trying to assign mm-hmm. why.
Yes, right, exactly.
You know, why. And his dad was a strict disciplinarian, and he didn't have a great relationship with his dad, Eddie Denton, the one who killed himself. And they interviewed the dad and asked him about his relationship with Eddie, and he said, you know, we were just kind of private people. We had a great family. We were kind of private. But the mother said that the husband really towed the line, and the kids had to, you know, line up, and, you know, that it wasn't great.
Yeah. I think she was the aunt.
Oh, okay.
But I took it as kind of a normal family. I mean, the dad had been in the military. He was strict with rules. So what? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, it's so hard.
Yeah, and he was devastated when he found out about his son.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing they were going by was the aunt had said, well, I'm assuming that they didn't have a great relationship because Eddie didn't talk about his dad that much.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of assumption on what we saw and speculation.
You know, I think that's part of the real difficulty of solving the problems of mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Schizophrenia is really hard.
Or manic, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything with the brain, as you know well, Catherine's mother is suffering with Alzheimer's right now. And she's in they just took her to a facility. Has it been a week yet?
Not quite.
Okay.
It was Wednesday.
Okay.
Today's Monday.
So
almost.
Okay. So 5 days ago. And it's just such an incredible drain on the family.
Yeah.
So hard
mm-hmm.
because the brain is such a uncharted territory. I don't know.
Well, it still is.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, science has come a long way with the heart and other parts of the body, but the brain still has a lot of mysteries to it.
They do.
To understand yet and discover.
Yeah. Sadly, Eddie was buried on Father's Day, which was just a real sad thing.
Mm.
And they ended up with more questions than answers
yes.
in terms of the study.
That's horrible.
Eventually, there was a bunch of information that was released from the study after the surviving boys kept on inquiring
mm-hmm.
of the archive where mm-hmm. it was. Would you please release these documents? But they redacted a bunch of information.
Right.
So, okay.
Claiming it's their protection of the other studies.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just give them the information.
Yeah.
That's all I have on this.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else
too.
To share?
No. In terms of what we were going to talk about, nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
Somebody in the documentary, I think it was a professional, said in the end, it's really both. They're both equally important, and both of them contribute to who we are.
yeah.
today. I would say that plus how God has wired us, which is nature.
I would say this about nature versus nurture. We all have the sinful nature.
Mm.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're bent toward brokenness. We're bent toward sinfulness. We're bent toward self. Yeah. I'm talking about myself.
Well,
that's me.
That's just all of us.
And so it takes nurture to overcome that brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
It takes love, joy, peace, patience, mm-hmm. kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. Those are the gifts of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It really takes that to overcome the brokenness. And it can overcome a broken heart. It can overcome the brokenness. We just have to let go and let God.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so cliche.
It's funny. It is and it isn't at all.
I know. It's simple, but it's hard.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, I don't know if I like that, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
All right. I have a scripture to share.
Yay.
Matthew 19. Verse 14 says this, Jesus said, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these.
Hear that, people?
When I saw those
mess
no.
with what God has brought into this world.
I saw those little boys and their big brown eyes and their adorable curly hair. And I was just like, oh, they were so cute.
Yeah. They were.
And I wish them and all of their families peace, and I wish them well.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as a call to action today, I think I would say just have grace. Have some grace with yourself and with others, because we're all just idiots trying to put one foot in front of the other.
And forgiveness, so you can be set free.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay. Anything else, Catherine?
No.
Okay. Well, this episode is being uploaded
before Wednesday.
Right. And I just want to say real quickly that I'm doing a premiere party at The Well.
Yes.
In Manteno, Illinois on Friday night.
Yay.
So if anybody's interested in coming to that, my film has just been released into the world. Via Comedy Dynamics.
It's so exciting, Tracy. You know, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. This was the biggest baby that I had to push out. It was. It took me years to birth this baby.
Yeah.
But it's out there, and we'll see what happens to it from here. But I am proud that, you know, I accomplished this effort because it was a Herculean effort just to get the material, put it on stage, figure out how to film it, and then get it out to distribution.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're celebrating that at a premiere party on Friday night at The Well
in
Manteno.
Is, what's the date?
Friday the 15th.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
2024, in case you're listening to this way later.
Oh, yeah, right. All right, well, you've been listening to the Life Happens, Laugh Anyway podcast. I'm still comedian Tracy DeGraff.
I'm still Catherine.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.